Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. And my name is Bob. Today it's going to be a special show because I have an interview that we'll be doing today. It's been a few weeks since I've done one, so thankfully we're back. Usually on the show I interview vocal groups, but today I'm interviewing a guy named Jimmy Mays, who actually had a band called the Mill Street Depot. And he has a very interesting story, actually. You should definitely keep tuned for it. So we'll be talking about his history and his music. And he's cut records, you know, from the early 60s through today, pretty much. So he definitely has an interesting story, and you should keep tuned. So first of all, Jimmy, you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, Radio Land. I'm the amazing Jimmy Mays.
Okay.
I'm from Chicago. I'm back.
Okay, cool. Well, it's exciting that you're back. And so first of all, I hope we could get started out by talking about you're not originally from Chicago, is that right?
No, I was born in Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay.
Playing the blues.
Okay, what instrument did you play?
I played drums.
Okay, so did you play in bands in Mississippi?
Yes, I played with all the juke joints, and then there was a guy, Duke Huddleston. He played all the big time clubs. And a drummer called Freddie Waits that played fingertips turned me on to Duke Huddleston, and that's how I got started with a variety of music in Jackson.
So how old were you when you started playing music?
I started playing music when I was 16.
Okay. Did you just pick up the drums? How did that work?
Well, my cousin blew a saxophone, and I wanted to get a saxophone, but the band leader said there's no more saxophones. All we got left is drums. So here I am.
So you pretty much, you just joined the band when you were 16. You just picked up the drums to play in a band.
In the high school band.
Okay, in school, okay.
Right.
So did you know you wanted to do music? Like that was your thing by then? Or what happened?
Well, I knew I wanted to do music because, it's a long story, but like Hank Ballard and the Midnighters and
okay.
The Firewalls, different people would come to Jackson.
Okay,
and
so
I would love to hang around.
Okay, so you were inspired by R&B artists at the time.
R&B artists and blues.
Okay, so what's the story? Were you just gigging for a while, playing in bands? Like, and how did you end up? So what happened from there?
Well, I played around Jackson, and when I left Jackson, I came straight to Chicago.
Okay.
I just started hanging out in clubs. I was too young, but I would hang out and beg the cats to let me sit in.
Okay, so were you like 18, 20? How old were you?
Well, I was 18, and I started, and I played around Chicago for 2 years.
How did you end up in Chicago? You just followed the music? Like you came?
Well, my parents was here. See, we were raised in Jackson, Mississippi, but our mother and father was here in Chicago.
Okay.
So then when I got to Chicago, I had a little job at R.R. Dunley.
Okay.
The bus boy.
Okay.
That wasn't me. So as I would hang around the different clubs, more and more people would listen to me play, and kids started calling me for different gigs.
Okay, so you started playing in different bands and stuff around town, Chicago.
Right.
So what did you play with anybody famous at the time?
Well, yes, I did. When I was a kid, and I started playing Sam Lee, had a job with Harlan Wolf and Sam Lee, and I'm just with you, the great Lil Walter.
Okay.
I don't say no cheating.
Okay.
So I played with Lil Walter.
Did you play on any recordings or just in clubs and stuff?
Just in clubs and touring on the road with Lil Walter.
So that was one of the first big guys you toured with was Lil Walter?
Yeah, because Walter at that time was a superstar in the blues world.
Yeah.
And they called me Junior, so he had to tell people I was his son.
Okay. So what years was that?
That was later 61, early 62.
Okay.
So then after that, I played up and down 63rd Street, and then I met Gerald Sims.
Okay.
And he gave me a break.
Okay.
Then I went to the Wrigley Theater one day.
Okay.
And ran into a singer called Tommy Hunt. He had just left the Flamingos.
Yeah.
And Tommy took me to New York, and the rest is history. I could go on and on about the different people I played with.
So did you play in any recordings or just in bands at the time?
At that time, just bands.
Okay. But you played, you ended up going to New York in Tommy Hunt's band.
Right.
Okay. And you, so what happened? Were you stayed in New York, New Jersey? What was it?
I stayed in New York for a while, and I played with Tommy until we had a little run-in.
Okay.
He was like a big brother to me. So after the run-in, I searched around New York with different groups, the Kansas City Playboys, and then Joey D.
Okay.
And Peppermint Twist Lounge. Joey D gave me a gig.
Okay.
And that was the first gig, so I left and went with Martha and Van Doubles for a while. So when I got back to New York, Joey put me back in the band, and we needed a guitar player.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that later on in the show.
Sure.
Well, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into more details about that. So, but in New York, you played. I know it's obscure to the audience, but there's a lot of people listening who might even know the Kansas City Playboys. You played with them for a second.
Wilbert Harrison had the record Kansas City.
Okay.
And they put a group behind Wilbert, and we were called the Kansas City Playboys.
Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that's how the group got their name.
Uh-huh.
So were you a member of the Kansas City Playboys?
Yes, I was. It was a three-piece band and three singers.
Okay.
We had keyboard, guitar, drums.
Okay.
And three singers.
Yeah, because they cut a few records, right?
Right.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were actually a member of the group. So are you on the Kansas City Playboys records?
Well, one Christmas session, but I left the group.
Okay.
And had other guests to come into the group after I left.
Okay, I would have
played on one session.
I would have brought recordings to play of those two. I didn't realize you were actually in the group. That's cool.
I'd love to hear that.
So you played with them. Then you played behind Joey D and the Starlighters.
Right.
And then you said you backed Martha and the Vandellas.
Right.
So when did you back Martha and the Vandellas?
Right at the time the Dancing in the Street came out. I would say 74.
Oh, 64.
I'm sorry, 64.
Yeah.
So speeding.
So she was touring and she needed a band.
Right.
They didn't have like a standard Motown band that toured with them?
Well, they had Chuck O'Camel that played with the big band.
Okay.
So the groups would go out and do different jobs on their own. And Martha was at the Peppermint Lounge. And I just left Tommy Hunt and the Kansas City Playboys. I was just hanging out. And I showed the drummer some of the things that are Martha's songs, because I could just pick up on them.
Okay.
And right after that, she asked me to come on the road with her.
So were you in Choker Campbell's band?
No.
Okay.
We just hang around
okay.
the Apollo Theater when the guys were coming in out of New York.
Okay. But you played. How long did you tour with Martha and Vandellas?
I stayed with Martha about 7 months.
Okay.
And right after I left Martha, I moved back to New York. It was 65. This is when I got back with Joey, and I went on my own and cut for Jubilee Records. I cut Drums for Sale and Plucking.
Yeah, so that came out. That was your first record that came out. It came out around 65.
Exactly.
And it was released on the Port label, which Jubilee distributed.
Subsidiary of Jubilee, Port Records.
And you're the band name on the label, it's like Jimmy Mays and the Soul Drums.
Soul Breed.
Soul Breed, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so sorry I didn't have that one to play. I would love to play that as your first record during the interview. I'm still looking for it, but I'll get it for you eventually. So you cut that record yourself, you produced it yourself?
I produced it myself. I got some money together and got the musicians, and I went to Mercury Records and Studios and recorded the record. And a friend of mine took me to Jubilee for me, and it was a Dynamite Instrumental. They put it out.
But you recorded it in New York?
In New York City.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know they had Mercury Studios in New York also.
Right, at that time.
Okay. And then did the record do anything? Do you know?
It was doing great. Matter of fact, I want to reach this guy if we can. Regis Philbin used to use it on his show in San Francisco. He would pantomime.
Oh, really?
He had a TV show.
That's cool. I didn't know.
To American Bandstand. And I never get a chance to meet him and tell him, hey, man, you're playing on my record.
Was he playing the drums on the record,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, he was pantomime.
That's cool. So he was playing you.
Yeah, he was playing me. Can you imagine?
So that record came out, and it was like a hit in different cities, you were saying?
Different cities. It was making noise.
So then what did you do after that? How'd you come up with the name Jimmy Mays and the Soul Breed?
Well, after playing behind so many groups, I felt like I said, well, I can do something on my own.
Okay.
So the TV show, the Mars Squad.
Okay.
So then I just said, well, I'll call mine the Soul Breed.
Okay.
For the first band, then I went on with different names.
Okay, so after that record came out, what did you do? Did you play in more bands? Did you stay in New York?
I stayed with Julie for a while, and then I said, hey, man, I'm gone. I got a record going, I thought.
Okay.
And it's not that easy.
Okay.
But after I left Joy, I had a band together called The Cousins.
Okay.
And we did some other recordings.
That was in New York still?
In New York City. So
Did The Cousins release anything?
We recorded one record. We recorded the original Soccer to Me Baby, but it was never released.
Okay. And then you were with The Cousins. What happened after that?
Well, we did a lot of touring. And then after the cousin, I went on the road with the Shirelles.
Okay.
Then I got back in Chicago, New York, and I played with Lonnie Youngblood for a while.
Okay.
So during that stint, Jimi Hendrix came back on the scene, because when Jimmy was with the Starlighters, we knew him as Maurice James and
okay.
Jimmy James.
So Jimmy played in your band behind Joey D and the Starlighters when they were touring?
Joey's band, but they considered me as the band leader.
Okay.
Because I found Kevin Duke and I found Jimi Hendrix.
So how did you... So I don't know if we should play some music or to talk some more. So let me play a record and then we can talk some more.
Okay, you tell them about the new record.
So, yeah, this is your new record and it's a remake of an older record that you did too, right? So this was probably the second record you ever released. It came out 69. What's the title of the record?
It's called The New Monkey Shine.
Okay, well, we'll play The New Monkey Shine and we'll get to how this record got released and we'll talk some more and we'll talk more about Jimi Hendrix and the band. So this is Jimmy Mays, and was this group called the Mill Street Depot when this came out? And the Mill Street Depot with The New Monkey Shine.
Yeah, Monkey Shine.
Tell me about this dance they call the Monkey Shine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you can be from 1 to 99 and do this dance called the Monkey Shine. You can be old folks, young folks, new and you. All you have to do is try to like get in the groove. They doing it down there in Soulsville. You people know what I'm talking about. Well, you can take all the dances and put them into one, and the Monkey Shine will come second to none. It is the number one. I'm talking about the Monkey Shine. Now, Monkey Shine, y'all. Monkey Shine.
Everybody out on the dance floor, let's see how this dance go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you put the women in the front and the men behind. This is what we call the Monkey Shine line. Good job. Monkey Shine, y'all. Come on. Stop it, too. Yeah, now all you do, you gotta like scratch your nose and wiggle your toes, pat your lips, and baby shake your hips, shake your head, scratch your legs. Monkey shine, baby, come on.
Okay, that was just Jimmy Mays and the Mill Street Depot with The New Monkey Shine. So up in here right now is Jimmy Mays talking about the history of his band and the music he's done. So that record came out in around 1969.
Right.
But before I played the record, we were still talking about some of the early stuff you did, where you were in a band behind Joey D and the Starlighters.
Yes.
And Jimi Hendrix was in your band. So you were starting to talk about how you discovered him and brought him into your band. So you were saying, what was his real name again?
Maurice James.
Okay.
And Jimmy James.
So how did that happen? How did he get to be a part of your band?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to let the people know, as I tell you this short story, I'm doing a book.
Okay.
So we're looking for a publisher. Now I'll give you a few ideas about the book.
Okay.
With Joey needed a guitar player. So I ran into a friend of mine, and I told him on Broadway, I said, man, we need a guitar player. He said, well, there's a guy that's playing with the Isley Brothers, but he's not happy.
Okay.
So I went to the hotel, so they were staying in the room together, and there's this long, lanky guy laying in the bed, half asleep. And I remember the big old books sitting in the room. And the guy woke him up, and we shook hands, and he said, wait, man, okay, I'll listen to, like, he's going to listen to us.
Okay.
Joe had to hit record. And that was Jimi Hendrix.
So he was a cocky guy, you're saying?
Well, no, he was funny.
Okay.
Jimmy's like different personalities. Like, when he wasn't doing anything, he was lazy.
Okay.
But when he was energetic in the studio, and even a comic, to an extent. But he was just, I guess he was just relaxing that particular day.
So you...
I introduced him to Joy.
Okay.
And he auditioned for us.
Okay.
And he joined the band.
So, and you said right before that he had been playing with the Isley Brothers.
Right.
What year was that?
Well, that was late 75, early 76.
65.
65.
Okay.
Man, I got to get 70s to get. Yeah, 65. And that's what the book is about. Things that nobody wrote about Jimmy. Everybody talked about what he did once he went overseas. But we have facts in the book that people would like to know about what kind of brother he was.
Yeah, like a lot of
became a song.
Like his early history.
Right.
Yeah, and I know you showed me you have some real cool photos with the early Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. So
was he called, how do you get that, was he still called Maurice James back then?
We called him Maurice all the time.
Okay.
And we took him first to Syracuse, New York, and then Buffalo. That was where all the fun originated, in Buffalo.
Okay.
But like I say, it's different chapters in the book.
Okay.
I give you one instance. Jimmy in Syracuse disappeared, and we couldn't find him all day.
Okay.
Right before showtime, he showed back up. We said, man, what happened? He had been into a different part of the city so he could get his hair done.
Okay.
And we were a nervous wreck. But once he hit stage, Joey D was, to Joey's credit, he was one of the first people to feature Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
He would let Jimmy do a song on his own during the show.
Okay.
Because we could recognize his talent. So other people just use him in the background.
Yeah.
But Joey D would let him do a song, and he would tear the house down.
So how long did you play in your band for?
Well, Jimmy stayed with us off and on about 7 to 8 months.
Okay.
In and out.
Okay.
Of the band. So this is what I want the public to know about. The times, if you ever pick up any book or any writings on Jimmy, they'll just say he spent time in New York and he played with Curtis Knight, King Curtis, and Joey D. But I want to give the people all these histories, some great things. Like, for instance, how the Mafia, well, I shouldn't say that word, but the club in Boston was going to kill him for fooling with all the chicks in the club.
Okay.
The women was crazy about him. So it's an interesting book.
And you told me some story about how later you ran into him and you didn't know who he'd become. Is that right?
Right.
Do you want to tell his story?
I was having a late snack in this club. Well, the hippest club at that time was called The Scene. It was down in the basement.
Okay.
So there was a little restaurant on top of The Scene, street level. So I was eating, young chick and myself, and this big crowd of people came in. So I saw this guy come by with a big hat and a feather, but there were so many people around him, so I didn't pay any attention.
Okay.
And then this girl said, well, hey, that's a friend of yours. I said, who? She said, well, that's a friend of yours. That's Jimi Hendrix. I didn't know who Jimi Hendrix was because I wasn't listening to rock and roll.
Okay.
Shame on me. And she said, you know him. He used to play with you.
Okay.
So then she said, well, you called him Maurice. So I got up and I fought my way through the crowd and hit him on the shoulder. And he turned around and he said, hey, little folk brother. That's what he used to call me.
Okay.
He jumped up and hugged me and we talked for a while. And he said, Jimmy, look, I'm busy, man, but give this lady your phone number and I'll be in touch. So I didn't pay it any attention. Just the little time he gave me then was cool with me, this giant rock and roll star. So about 3 days later, my phone rang. And the lady said, Jimmy's in the studio and he wants you to come over.
Okay.
And I showed up, and like I said, the details is in the book, but I showed up, and during the course of the night, we recorded My Friends.
Okay.
And that's the song that I played on My Friends. And later on, I'll tell you about another song I played on called The Georgia Blues.
Okay.
But it's a funny thing. They used My Friends on 3 different albums of Jimmy's.
Okay.
And I'm still waiting to get paid.
Okay, well, I guess what we could do now is play another record that you recorded, and then we'll still back into the history that went behind this record.
Okay.
So this record I'm going to play is the second, or actually it's the third record you released after the Monkey Shine. It came out, I think, around 72. It's the Social Security Number.
We'll do something about you I like.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, we'll do Social Security. It means that I want to do something about you I like. We'll do both of them. Do Social Security. That would be great.
Yeah, well, the other side of Social Security is Ghetto to the Top that I have here.
Right.
Well, okay, well, we'll play these and we'll talk after. So this is the third record you released. They came out about 72, is that right?
Right.
And this record is about wanting to the government taking away all your money for Social Security and wanting to get the money back, right?
That's right, I wanted to get paid.
So this is Jimmy Mays with the Mill Street Depot with Social Security number.
Monday to Friday, 8 to 4, and then steal me right outside Chicago. Well, I went to my overtime, and when I got my paycheck, and all that took out, I thought I wanted to start the crime. It all went to FSD. You people out there know what I'm talking about. Y'all know the extra money they take out?
Yeah.
Well, when I got there, I took a seat and sit down. I looked up and answered the meanest man in town. He said, "What's your number, boy?" So I told him, I said, 707, cold at the phone, and the last bitch was 7-Eleven, and I asked him if he didn't know anymore. So after a while, the man looked at me and smiled and grinned. He said, "I'm sorry, kid. You got to go back to work. Please put enough time in for the..." I say, "What?" In D.C., and it read like this. It said, "Mr. President, Congressman, citizens, and members, ladies and representatives, y'all got to get this thing together so in the end, the poor man can win. Now, I don't want to go to politics. I just want to be the glitch.
So, if
I be the glitch, I can get my money. Can I get my money out? Will they give it up? Will they give it to me?
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is an interview that we're doing, and usually I interview vocal groups on the show, but today we're interviewing a guy named Jimmy Mays who played drums in a band, and his main band was called Mill Street Depot. So that record that we just played came out around 1972, and that was called Social Security Number.
Right.
But we still even haven't gotten back to the point of the history of talking about it yet, because we were talking before we left off about Jimi Hendrix playing in your band and how you ran into him after he became famous, and he actually brought you into the studio and you played on Jimi Hendrix's records.
Right.
So, and you said you played on one more Jimi Hendrix record, is that right?
Yeah. Second time in New York, for some reason he called me and asked what we were doing. I told him I was with Lonnie Youngblood. He knew Lonnie.
Okay.
And I told him we was in Small Paradise. So that was the hippest club in Harlem.
Okay.
Everybody.
When was all this happening?
All this was in 67.
Okay.
So when we were cutting my friends, and during this time he came back off a tour, and he called me. So he came to Small Paradise two nights in a row.
Okay.
So each night, Smalls would close at 4 o'clock. So he told us, he surprised us. He said, "I got studio time." So we all jumped in the limo, and we went to the record plant. And we were just jamming.
Okay.
And we did this for two nights in a row. So during that jamming, one song was released later by his producers after he died. Was called The Georgia Blues.
Okay.
Lonnie Youngblood was singing lead and blowing tenor sax. And the Blood Brothers, who was the name of the band.
Okay.
I was on drums, and Winfield was on keyboards, and we had Hank Anderson on bass, and some other cats.
Okay.
So Jimmy would just play. And then certain songs, he would just say, I like this song. It's the same way we did with My Friends. And it's a shame that these songs came out after Jimmy had died. But I'm real proud to be a part of the man's history that his producers recognized the quality of the songs and put them out later after he had passed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always good to get good music out and not have it lost.
Right.
So, and you told me before that at the end of one of the Jimi Hendrix songs, you can hear you yelling or something. Is that right?
On the song My Friends.
Okay.
At the beginning, he had us all to make a lot of noise, like we were partying.
Okay.
So, but he kept saying on the overdub, he said, I like this song. I like it. Let's do one more cut. I said, uh-huh. He might use this. So right at the end, I said, all right. And if you listen to that song today, you hear Jimmy Mays saying, all right. I snuck that in.
Okay, and then, so all this time you were staying continuously in New York, is that right?
Yeah, and New York was the place to be.
And then you ended up, after what happened after that? You ended up moving south for a while?
No, after I left Lonnie Youngblood, and these recordings were behind us, I put together the Mill Street Depot.
Okay.
I was using the name, but I actually formed the band.
How'd you come up with the name Mill Street Depot?
I was born in, like I said, in Jackson, Mississippi, and there was this train station.
Okay.
Right at Mill Street and Capitol.
Okay.
And so one side, you go in on Capitol Street, was white people go on Capitol, and black people had to go in on Mill Street.
Okay.
So Mill Street was like a heritage thing. I said, this would be a good name because there's history in this.
Okay.
And I named my band Mill Street Depot.
Okay. And then when you formed the Mill Street Depot, were you in New York at the time?
I was in New York at the time.
Okay.
But right after I formed the band, we were touring, and this agent got us a 6-month contract in Mexico City.
Okay.
So once we got there, the people liked us, and we stayed for 2 years.
Okay, so you stayed for 2 years in Mexico City from around 67 to 69?
Later 69 up until 72.
Okay, and around that time, that's when the Monkey Shine record came out, is that right?
Right, it came out while I was in Mexico City, but in the meantime, I recorded for CBS records in Mexico City, and we released Ghetto to the Top.
Okay.
And we did two movies.
Okay.
One movie was called Fin the Fiesta.
Okay.
And that's End of the Party. I did 7 songs, and I was a music producer.
So you are you actually in this movie?
No, I was in Justice at 12 years old.
So you were in. So you did the music for a Mexican movie, and yeah. You could see you in this other movie.
The second movie was Justice was Alice Senior Dosi Anders, which means Justice at 12 years old. Now, there was this little girl that ran away. She was 12 years old.
Okay.
And police was looking for her, and they found her in this disco club.
Okay.
And she was dancing, and my band was playing. And so that's how we got in the movie.
I got to get this movie.
We were doing the song from the ghetto to the top.
What's the movie called again?
Justice is 12 years old.
Justice is 12 years old, except it has a Spanish title?
The Spanish title was Just a Sinner, a la Doce Años.
Okay. I'll be looking for it. I'll do whatever I can to find that movie where you're...
I would love to get a copy of it myself. The second movie was End of the Party. It's called Fin the Fiesta. Now, I got a chance to see that movie.
Okay.
It was like a motorcycle gang took over these people's mansion.
Okay.
And the same typical motorcycle movie. But it was interesting for me because I had to time different parts of the movie. The whole thing.
So you did the score to the movie pretty much. Yeah, that sounds like an awesome movie too.
Great Fiesta, End of the Party. So I hope we all can get a chance to see it. But I hope we can find some TV. They showed it once on TV at one of the Spanish stations.
Oh, really?
So maybe
on the internet I can find it on video or something like that. So then you stayed in Mexico City for 2 years, and did you? So you brought your band from New York to Mexico City. So how did that record, Monkey Shine, get cut? Who put it out?
Well, I cut Monkey Shine right before I moved to Mexico.
Oh, so you cut it in New York.
I cut it in New York, and it was getting played in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia. Because a buddy of mine was still with the Shirelles, and he would call me and say, hey, man, we heard your record.
Okay.
And but I didn't get a chance to get any of the benefits of the record because I was constantly on the move.
Do you remember what label it came out on?
Don't remember the label.
But do you remember where the label was based? Was it based in New York?
Based in New York.
Okay.
I just remember the producer was telling me that Don Corvey, I knew Don from when I was playing with Tommy Hunt.
Okay.
And Don Corvey was a big time record producer. I knew he had something to do with the record.
Okay.
And I was feeling great about that. But when the opportunity to go to Mexico came up, I had to leave everything behind in New York.
Okay. And then you cut the record Ghetto to the Top with the social security number on the flip of it.
Sorry.
And that came out on a Chicago label called FM Records.
Right. Red Saunders.
Okay.
On the label. And I told Red, I said, man, I got some stuff that I did in New York and Mexico, but I want to put it out here.
Okay.
So Red said, use my label.
Okay.
And that's where the FM came in.
So you said you did it in this Mexican movie also.
Right.
So it wasn't released on record, you just did it in the movie, and then the record got pressed on the Chicago label later.
Well, see, I own the master tapes.
Okay.
So when I did it, I kept the rights to the tapes.
Okay.
So when I got here, I just pressed up the tapes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you also, you said while you were in Mexico, you had at least one track on some CBS, Mexico CBS.
Right.
It was an LP, like a compilation of artists.
Well, it was one, yeah, it was called Offensive Pop.
Okay.
And they did, we did three of my songs, El Funky, Ghetto to the Top, and Social Security was on that particular.
Oh, so it actually got released on the CBS Mexico label.
They released it.
So that record got released a bunch of times.
It's floating around.
Yeah, so.
Still waiting to be a hit.
Yeah, hopefully somebody out there who hears this will turn up that and I can get you a recording of the CBS Mexico stuff, although I don't think I'll be finding that stuff in Chicago.
it was CBS International.
Okay.
It did good in Miami, Florida, on the Spanish stations in Miami.
Okay. So then, after you stayed for 2 years in Mexico City. What happened after that?
Well, I came back to Chicago, and I dropped out of music for a while.
Okay.
And after recovering, after coming down, so to speak, and I'd been, like, we were, like, one of the number one groups in Mexico City.
Okay.
I got a chance.
Were there a lot of groups in Mexico City?
And with different groups. I met an interesting guitar player, Javier Bartiz. He taught Santana.
Okay.
Licks. So I'm waiting to meet Santana so we can talk about Bartiz.
Okay.
And after meeting different people, and another gentleman I had the pleasure of meeting was Dennis Hopper, the actor.
Okay.
Whenever he would come to Mexico City, he would shoot straight to the club.
Okay.
And he took a liking to me. We would hang out all night, two or three days at a time sometimes.
But you could tell he was a crazy guy.
Oh, didn't he? He told me, listen to this, this is a story, it's a personal story. He said whenever he would come back to the States, he would just go to the rooms where they searched him. He said he would just go to the room and get naked because he knew they were going to search him anyway. So he would just go straight to the detention room.
So you were in Mexico City for a while. Did you come back to Chicago after that?
I came back. Instead of New York, I came back to Chicago.
And then when you were in Chicago, they finally released this record on the FM label we were talking about.
Right.
The Social Security Number and Ghetto to the Top on the other side. So let me play the Ghetto to the Top side and we can talk some more. So what's this? Before I play the song, what's the song about?
Okay, good deal.
What's the song about? Actually, tell the audience what the song is about.
Well, this is a short story.
Okay.
Living in New York at the time when I wrote this, and New York had our first black mayor, Mayor Stokes, in Cleveland.
Okay.
And this is when the Nets and the Jets all won.
Okay.
At the same time. And James Brown was the number one soul brother. So if you listen to the story, it's a message for kids.
Okay.
If you can do anything in life, and you can go from the ghetto to the top if you just believe in yourself.
Okay. So this is Jimmy Mays and the Mill Street Depot with Ghetto to the Top.
Ghetto to the top.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, we are doing an interview with Jimmy Mays, who had a band called the Mill Street Depot, and that record was one of probably your fourth or fifth record that you released, and it came out on the Chicago label called FM, and it was called Ghetto to the Top. And earlier we played the B-side of the record, which was called Social Security Number.
And I did the basic tracks in New York, but I did cover some of the parts of the tapes with some local guys in Chicago, Mr. Jimmy Pryor.
Okay.
Played the bass.
And he's on your later stuff, too.
Right, on my later stuff. So Jimmy and I have been doing things. So Jimmy and James Lockett blew the horn. He's with Junior Wells right until he got killed.
Okay.
James Lockett and George Bazemore. Both of them I imported them to Chicago, and they both end up playing with Junior Wells.
Okay, yeah, and it's interesting with the story behind the record, because it came out on a Chicago label, but you're talking about the Mets and
yeah.
all the New York teams. So before, when I heard the record, I'm like, why are they talking about all this New York stuff on the Chicago label?
That's right. But with this particular song, I thought it was an inspiration, because if you listen to the last verse, it says, "All you kids, black and white," but I want to put, "All you kids, red, yellow, black and white. Whatever you do in life, make sure you do it right. Don't do no harm to your fellow man. Always do the best you can, and you can go from the ghetto to the top." So I want to send that message out to everybody.
It's still a relevant song today. So how long? So you stayed in Chicago for a while after that song came out. Is that right?
After that.
And actually, one thing is the song Social Security Number got re-released on the Shout label right around that time.
Right, that's what I was coming to.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. At the time when I met Jimmy Pryor, we went into Eddie Thomas.
Okay.
He was producing Curtis Mayfield. He was a promotion man for Curtis.
He had the Kurt Tom label.
Kurt Tom, and all the big cats, Eddie Thomas was a promotion man. So he called Atlanta and got me the deal with Bang and Shout Records. And after that, because of that record, I met different people here, and Jimmy Pryor and Lacey Gibson and myself, we ended up going on tour with Jimmy Reed.
Okay.
In 73, right behind this record.
Okay.
And we did Jimmy Reed's last big gig, the Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Fest.
Okay.
In 73, Ray Charles was headlining.
Okay.
Charlie Mingus and Jimmy Reed. It was like a comeback for Jimmy Reed.
Okay.
So we were Jimmy's band. All that tied in with this record.
Okay, and do you know if the Shout version of Social Security Number was the same version that got released on FM, or if it was slightly different?
Slightly different, because on the Shout version, I added harmonica player.
Okay, and later you recorded a totally different version, which we'll get to later in the story.
Right.
So you toured with Jimmy Reed. How long did that go on for?
Well, we did...
To that show in 74?
We did... The Ann Arbor Blues Fest, and then we came back and did a High Chaparral with a big show. Coco Taylor was on the show.
Okay.
It was like a tribute to Jimmy Reed. And then we did Ethel's in Detroit, another blues club, legend club. And right after Ethel's, Jimmy got sick. Right after that, he passed.
Okay.
So we were actually the last band to tour with the legend.
Okay, yeah, that's a lot of history there. And then, mm-hmm. What year was that?
All this was in 73.
Okay. So what did you do? I know your next record came out on Stang Records around 76, 77.
76.
So what did you do in between that time?
Just did a lot of gigging.
Okay.
I was a busy young man at that time.
Okay. And then, so then you ended up cutting a record called You Won't Support Me and I May Be Right, I May Be Wrong.
Right.
And that came out in 76 on Stang Records, which is a New York label.
Okay.
And you have an interesting story. How did you get hooked up with that?
Well, a buddy of mine, at the time the group was called The Moments.
Okay.
They were with Joe and Sylvia Robinson, Stang, all Platinum Records.
Yeah.
So when Al and them came through, Al Goodman and myself, we were raised up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay.
So I played the tape for Al. And he said, "Hey, man, Joe would like this."
And Al was in a group in Jackson, right, the Corvettes?
Yeah, we had a group called the Corvettes. I was the drummer.
Okay.
And Al Goodman was one of the background singers in the Corvettes.
So you actually played drums on the Corvettes? Because there's actually a record that got released by the Corvettes. It says the Corvettes on the label, and it's on a label called Copa. So a record actually got released. Do you play drums on that record?
No, I had made my way to New York by the time they did that. They were still in Jackson.
Okay.
When they did that.
Okay.
And I had made my way. I was busy. I had made my way to New York.
Okay.
But back to You Won't Support Me. We got the tape for Joel.
Okay.
And what they did was they took the voice and they took it in their studio and they took the studio band and played behind the track that we had did. And You Won't Support Me came out and it hit on the charts right away.
Okay.
It came in 99. The last time I looked, it was 94 and climbing.
Okay.
And right after that.
So you're saying that they took off the band track you did and put on, so you're not actually the band on it, but the vocals are the vocalist.
Yeah, but I wrote the song.
I know you played on the original version, but they cheated you out of the band.
Well, they got my permission.
Okay.
And I actually like their version because they added the strings.
Okay. And then who are the vocalists on it, do you remember?
A young lady, Dietra Farr, she's a great singer.
Okay.
Dietra did the track, but she didn't want to sign with that particular label with the group. So we had a young lady by the name of Toni Jackson to come in and take her place. And Toni Jackson was also a great singer, Toni Jackson and J.J. Burton.
Okay.
And J.J. Burton sang on the original record.
Okay.
Background. So I formed a group around J.J. Burton and Toni Jackson.
Okay. So Toni Jackson and J.J. Burton, you're saying, were the main singers in Mill Street Depot around that time?
Around that time, right.
So I want to play the record. I actually like the flip side. I like the I may be right, I may be wrong side. Yeah. Which song do you want me to play?
I'll go with You Won't Support Me.
Okay, I'll play that record. Okay. So this is the Mill Street Depot with You Won't Support Me, and this came out around 76. On Stang Records, but you recorded the original version in Chicago, right?
Chicago, right.
Okay, so here it is.
You gave me three sons and two pretty little girls. Thank you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, we're in the middle of an interview with drummer Jimmy Mays, who had a band called the Mill Street Depot. And the record we just played came out in 1976, I think. It was called You Won't Support Me. And that was probably the biggest record you cut, right, that got played nationally.
My biggest record.
And we were just talking about how, even though you were based in Chicago at the time, you got it released on the New York Stang label through your Jackson connections with Al Goodman,
right,
who was in the Moments, who were on that label at that time.
Right.
So you got that record released, and you were telling me that who did the strings on that record?
World famous arranger Sammy Lowe.
Okay.
And that's what really helped put the record over, with the string arrangement. But if I may, before I go any further, I'd like to take the time out to thank you, Rob, for having us on the show. My band and the spirit. So, people, I want to tell you, this guy is great. So always tune in and listen to this show.
Thanks. I mean, you know, I'm a young guy, so I feel like I have a responsibility to recognize all the people who actually made the music that I'm playing on the show, since, you know, I wasn't around at the...
I don't want to say you're doing a heck of a job around here, but you're doing a great job, Rob.
Okay, thank you. So the record that you cut, you said it got some play on the East Coast. Mainly?
But it played around Chicago as well. It was doing good.
Okay.
Overseas, I was real proud. I was picking up all the trade, the record, Cashbox and Billboard, and we were getting a lot of play.
Okay.
It was in the top 10, like Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Detroit. It was telling me it sold 5,000 copies in Detroit in 1 week. It was,
okay,
it was a big record.
So did you tour any more off of that record?
No, they was waiting for the record to get into the top 50.
Okay.
They were sending them tours, but things slightly started changing at All Platinum Records, and we got caught up in the shuffle.
Okay.
At that time, and the group wasn't the Moments anymore. The main group.
The beginning, Al Goodman Brown.
Ray Goodman Brown,
sorry.
And then it changed over to Sugar Hill Records.
Yeah.
So we was kind of put to the side.
Yeah, so it was just bad timing for the label.
Bad timing for me.
So then it was a few years before you cut another record, and the next record you cut was a remake of Social Security, and it came out on Gerald Sims' label.
Right.
So were you just gigging locally in between that time, pretty much?
Yeah, I was still gigging locally and in and out the studio. So I recorded Tramp. Right? We did Tramp by Otis Redding and Carla Thomas.
Yeah, well, it was a Lowell Fulsom track originally. Yeah,
he was right. So I did the version, young lady by the name of Beth. We did our new version of it. So that was on my first label, Depot Records.
But I think first you cut a remake of Social Security on Gerald Sims' Jerem label, and then you formed your own label after that, right?
No, I'm coming to that.
Oh, okay. So you're saying Tramp came out first.
Tramp, and Gerald liked the record.
Okay.
So then he bought the studio. He bought Chess Records.
Okay.
So then he said, "Come on, Jimmy, I'll cut something on you."
Okay.
So we kind of put Tramp to the side.
Okay.
And I went with Jerem Records.
So you actually released Tramp first, though, is that right?
Yes.
So you formed your own label for the first time called Depot Records. And you released Tramp, and then the flip of that record was a remake of your song El Funky that you were talking about. You did
right,
in Mexico.
Exactly.
So then Gerald Sims liked the song, and you were in contact with Gerald from back in the day, right? From the early 60s.
I knew Gerald when I was a kid.
Okay.
So back in the day.
And so you remade Social Security on his label with the flip side called Disco Drums.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you want me to play? I can play the version of Tramp that you cut.
I haven't heard Disco Drums. So anything you play, any order that you have will be fine with me.
Okay, well, I'll play Tramp, and if we have time at the end, I'll try to get in Disco Drums.
Okay.
So this is Jimmy Mays with his remake of the song Tramp that you cut on your own label.
Right.
Tramp! What you call me?
Tramp!
You did.
No, ass in boots.
That's that's all right. Makes me feel good. No one doggone thing. I'm a lover. Mama was. Papa too. And I'm the only child. Loving is all I know to do.
You know what, Jimmy?
What?
You are fast, boy.
That's all right. That's good.
You know what? You wear those shoes.
No,
shoes. And then you get hold on.
What would you do? Ooh. I'm a lover. Mama was. Papa too. Loving is a tradition. That's what we do. And I'm the only son of a girl. This side of the sun.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Jimmy Mays in the Mill Street Depot with his remake of the song Tramp. What year did that come out? Around 80, something like that?
81, 82, somewhere like that.
Okay, and you were saying the woman who you're doing the back and forth with on the record, who's got the accent on the record.
We actually got married.
Okay.
Her name was Elizabeth.
Okay.
And if you listen to the fire in the record, we would actually argue like that all the time in real life.
Okay.
So we stayed married for 3 months and one day.
Okay, so one thing that's interesting is all the other records we talked about, they came out on other labels, but for this you actually formed your own record label to put out the record.
Right.
Because I haven't talked to anybody, I don't think, on the air yet who actually formed their own label to put out their own music. So why did you do that? How did that come about?
Well, by me not being a singer, so I sing the blues to the best of my ability, so I had these ideas. So what I did was I just started, different record companies had put my records out before, so I just said, well, I'd give it a shot on my own label.
Okay.
I've had a little success, and still I will try it. So I decided to put my own label together so I could have the freedom to do what I want to do.
Okay, so you press it up, and then you said you tried to take it to New York to promote it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then did you get any play locally in Chicago?
A little play.
Okay.
But Purvis Band gave me a little play.
Okay.
Purvis helped me out a little, but we couldn't get to none of the major stations. But I still keep the faith.
Yeah, I know it was real hard back then because like all the smaller independent labels that they had were folding and they were all major labels back then. So
right.
It was real hard to have an independent label and get a breakthrough on the major stations.
That's right. Still hard.
So on your record label, you actually ended up releasing, I guess, three records on the Mill Street Depot and then one on another artist, Ken Allison and The Whole Truth.
Right.
And we talked about in between you also had one record on Gerald Sims' Jerem label. So one thing I want to talk about is the other two Mill Street Depot's records. One of them is Jimmy Mays and the Finesse Band.
Right.
So is it still the Mill Street Depot or did you change the name? What happened?
No, it's still, see, I went to the Finesse Band at one time, but I'm back with the Mill Street Depot. People all through the years,
so
people see me now, maybe say Mill Street Depot.
So the name of your group was temporarily called the Finesse Band, is that what
it
you're saying?
Temporarily called for a moment.
Okay.
But I had to go back to Mill Street Depot.
Why'd you come up with the name Finesse Band?
Well, my brother is a hairstylist, and they call him Finesse.
Okay.
I always thought that name was slick.
Okay.
But, and it worked for a while.
Okay.
But still, and then, well, my mother in Jackson, Mississippi, she kept on saying, boy, go back to Mill Street Depot.
Okay.
And Mill Street Depot rings a bell.
Okay.
So my brother and I talked about it because he kind of wanted me to leave him with that Finesse name, what we call our production company, Finesse Productions. So I went back with Mill Street Depot.
Okay, so the second record you cut was called Substitute For You and Something About You I Like.
Yeah, that did real nice for me.
And then the third record you cut on the label was called Finesse featuring James
Locke, a song called The Whistler.
And then the flip of that record was Finesse featuring Jimmy Pryor.
Pryor, Open the Door to Your Heart.
Yeah, the cover of the Daryl Banks song.
Daryl Banks was a friend of mine.
Oh, you knew Daryl?
I knew Daryl.
Okay.
Before he made and after he made it in New York.
Okay.
Met him in Columbus, Ohio.
He was from Detroit originally, wasn't he?
Detroit.
So how did
Buffalo, New York. He's in between Buffalo and Detroit.
Okay.
And we met him in Columbus, Ohio, and he followed us to Detroit. And he kept saying, hey, I'm going to have a hit record.
Okay.
With Tom Hunt at the time. And next time, man, we turn around, because this guy would just hang around.
Okay.
Big to sit in. Next thing you know, Open the Door to Your Heart. Giant record.
Okay. So you remade it like in tribute to Daryl Banks.
And Jimmy Pryor did a dynamite job on it.
Okay. And then, so let me play one of those records before we go to what you've been doing since. So I'm going to play The Whistler, is that okay?
Okay, that would be great.
Okay, so
Big Steppers record, by the way.
Okay, so this is a song you wrote and produced and
right.
And they even talk about in the song.
That's
they're like, Jimmy Mays wrote this song.
That's my brother doing the talk. Hey, Finesse.
So this is the Finesse Band featuring James Lockett, and this is The Whistler.
Thank you.
Okay, you turned to the Sitting in the Park show. That was just the Finesse Band featuring James Lockett with the Whistler, and the Finesse Band is actually the Mill Street Depot. So if you're just tuning in, we're in the studio with Jimmy Mays of the Mill Street Depot, and that was one of the last records that you put out on your own Depot record label.
Right.
And it was a nice tune. Do you remember the people singing on that track? Obviously, singing lead was James Lockett, because that's...
There's Diane Womack.
Okay. Diane Womack?
Yes.
I know her, actually.
Yeah, Diane,
she's the wife of Ray, one of the guys I interviewed named Ray Foreman.
Right, and I think they were doing the same as well.
That's funny, I didn't even know they were on.
Ruth Thompson was singing background.
Yeah, she wrote records with him. That's cool. They were just up here like a month ago.
Ruth Thomas.
Okay.
Who was doing the background.
Yeah, it's Bruce Thompson, right? Yeah.
Bruce Thompson, yeah, keyboard player.
Yeah, he had a group for a second too called Chocolate Sunday. They
really?
Cut a record.
I
yeah.
I didn't know about that. Okay. Bruce is a great guy.
Yeah. I just learned something else too. So that record came out around 87, is that right?
Right.
Okay. So what have you been doing since then?
Well, right now I'm reforming the Mill Street Depot, and I'm looking for some more talent. I want to get some younger guys and women so they can contact me.
Okay.
Or they can contact you here at the station.
Okay.
And I would appreciate it if it's all right for anybody to contact you. And if I may, before I leave, our time is getting near, I would like to mention to the people out there, don't forget about my book by Jim Hendrix and myself, and we're looking for a publisher.
Yeah, definitely. I'll announce it when it comes out. So right now you're looking... So first of all, you did release a CD recently, right, in 2004? It's Jimmy Mays with McKinley Mitchell's last recording.
Mitchell, right.
So when was the stuff on the CD recorded?
It's all through the years.
Okay.
A bunch of songs I put together. I actually started back from 67 up until current time.
Okay, so...
And you can also get this on CD Baby.
Okay, so people... So we'll play one track from this CD that McKinley Mitchell sings on the track we're going to play. Is that right?
That's fine.
Okay. So you told me to play Something About You. Is that one of the ones that McKinley's singing on?
No, that's me.
Okay, well, I'll play that, and I'll play another one that McKinley's also singing on.
Okay.
So you put this CD out, and you said people can get it at cdbaby.com.
Right.
And you said right now you're trying to reform a band. Is that right?
Right. I'm looking for talent.
Okay. Do you know how can people get in? Do you have a website? How can people get in contact with you?
I have a website, jimmymays@peoplepc.com.
Okay, so
jimmymays@peoplepc.com.
So that's your email address. People can email you. If they want to get in contact with you about anything, or if there's talent to play in your band.
Right.
Okay.
That's right. You can reach me there.
Okay, cool. So, have you been playing anywhere else recently besides trying to reform your band?
No, well, in between getting ready for this new CD based around Monkeyshine,
okay,
and getting a book together, I've been pretty busy.
Okay.
So we're actually going to start booking clubs sometime in July.
Okay.
Or the band will be available.
Okay, well, I'll definitely announce, if you want me to announce, like, after you reform the dates you do, or when your book comes out, or if you have new material.
Right.
But so the latest thing you've done, again, it's called Jimmy Mays with McKinley Mitchell's Last Recordings.
Right. And Jimmy Mays Messing with the Kids.
Okay, and that you can get from cdbaby.com. So we're going to play one of the records off of it called Something About You.
All right. And I'd like to tell people out there, goodbye and God bless.
Okay, well, we'll come on the air right after this song, too.
Giving me hanky panky, and that attitude. working on being a millionaire. And the last thing I need is a woman that don't care, sitting on the bar, being a star, talking about where you've been and who you are. You know what else, baby? If your credentials showed potentials, I could dress you up, let you prance, take you out, baby, let you dance, feed you steak, get you a condominium by the lake.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. You have just been listening to an interview with Jimmy Mays, who had his own band, the Mill Street Depot, and that was just a cut off of his most recent CD called Something About You. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And so, again, keep a lookout for the book that Jimmy's trying to get published about Jimi Hendrix and new material that he has coming out eventually and his band, which he's trying to reform. So keep a lookout for dates that his band will be playing at. So any last words for the audience?
I'd like to tell everybody to be looking out for the book, like he said, and be listening for the new record, Monkey Shine. It's a brand new dance going to sweep the nation.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so this last thing that we're going to play is off of your new CD, or your most recent CD, and this actually has McKinley Mitchell doing a remake of his song, All of a Sudden. And if anyone has any questions, you can call up 773-702-8424.